This evening is dedicated to samadhi, that state of superconscious bliss, which is the goal of the spiritual path. It is dedicated to our beloved guru, Paramahansa Yogananda, a self-realized master who attained the highest state of samadhi, known as Maha Samadhi. And it is dedicated to Swami Kriyananda, whose passing from this world last April was blessed by Yogananda's promise, freedom will come to you at the end of your life. And last but not least, it is dedicated to each one of us, within whom the timeless state of samadhi ever resides. As Yogananda said, self-realization is the knowing in all parts of body, mind, and soul that you are now in the possession of the kingdom of God, that God's omnipresence is your omnipresence, that you do not have to pray that it come to you, and all that you need to do is improve your knowing. Sister Gyanamata also said, see nothing, look at nothing but the goal ever shining before you. The theme of tonight presented itself as samadhi now, why not? Let's go for it. We've got prayer demands and a program of helping to awaken that state, and why not? Let's do it. Let's do it together.
Through the star in opal eye, see the Christ everywhere. Sleeping in every atom, in protons, electrons.
Sleeping in every atom, in protons, electrons.
Golden misty aureole adorns the opal door.
Golden misty aureole adorns the opal door.
As you all know, I just returned a couple of days ago from 8 weeks traveling in India, visiting our various centers there, and doing what I could to spread Master's teachings. It was a poignant visit for many reasons, because it was in Pune, India. It was the last time I saw Swamiji in the body, so I was going back to that place. It was a wonderful trip. I enjoyed every minute of it, even to the day when I was driving to the airport to get on the plane to California. I was still entirely in the moment, in the place. I have to say, as soon as I touched the ground in California, I was so happy to be back. With all due respect to my friends in India who will probably also see this. But the experience of it was enormously expansive in a way that I want to try to make real also for all of you and move it way beyond my own personal experience. It's impossible to think of Master's Mahasamadhi without also having it all involved with the fact that this is the year that Swamiji also left us. And in 6 weeks or so, we'll be celebrating the first anniversary of that. Partly because so much of what we know of Master, and especially what we know of how to serve Master, has been perfectly exemplified for us by Swamiji. I was remembering the year 2003. Swamiji had moved to India in November of that year. And when the Mahasamadhi came, Master's Mahasamadhi, they were in the ashram in Gurgaon, 10 by 8 was the address, and they had a satsang on the roof. The roofs of many Indian houses are huge open patios. And Swamiji sat there and talked about Master's living presence. And as he talked, a full moon rose behind him. so that when you watch the video of it, you see this moon coming up, you know, as he speaks. It's like the light of the infinite dawning behind him. And it was one of those periods, one of those moments, when everything about time and space dissolves, and we're just in the eternal moment. I was reading something of Master talking about, he uses the phrase, when he sees that God wants him to incarnate again, to take a physical body. How does that call come? Who knows? When he sees that God wants him to incarnate again, and he sees the personality he's going to have to assume, this phrase you all know, first, it's uncomfortable, like a heavy overcoat on a hot day, but then he gets used to it, and he begins to function as, in this case, Paramhansa Yogananda. When I've been talking about Swamiji's demise, stepping out of his body, many of you have heard me talk about how that which to us seemed so enormous, such an enormous change, I appreciate that for Swamiji, it was a very small change. He was living in the infinite spirit, animating this one body, and then the responsibility for that body was taken away from him. At the end of Master's life, Swamiji talks about walking with him and that Master staggered a little bit and explained it to Swamiji, I'm in so many bodies, I forget sometimes which one I'm supposed to keep going. When God calls him into an incarnation, he steps into it. It's uncomfortable at first, but then he gets used to it. These masters move in and out of this dimension, of the details of this dimension, but the flow of energy for them is always one flow. Just one flow of energy. And that flow of energy is God calls and my soul responds. And we have personified, we have had exemplified for us, you know, what it means to be a self-realized master in the person of Yogananda. It shows us in his eyes what it means to be infinite. We can look at all the masters, but we tend to look especially at Master. And we see in his eyes what it means to be infinite. And then we have had the example of Swamiji. And what he shows us is what it means to serve that infinity. What it means to take this little human life that we all live in our own way. The remarkable thing about travel is that it's a myth. We get into the airplane, we take this enormously long flight, we're in that humming metal tube for just an endless period of time, and then it stops and you get out of it and you look around and the air smells different and the people are moving differently and the name of the place is different and the traffic rules are really different. Just to complete all of that, and yet there's no difference. And in fact, the less difference there is, the better. Toward the end of Swamiji's life, he moved so much. He often did not really know where he was. Sometimes he didn't know what season it was. He didn't know sometimes whether it was day or night. It was one flow of energy. And that flow of energy is, Master, what would you have me do? And am I in tune with this infinite ray? I was listening to some very old talk of Swamiji's that comes through the Treasures on the Path. Not only was Swamiji's way of presenting himself very different in the 70s and in the 80s, but the recordings are a little bad, so his voice is a bit higher. So it's a very different energy than what we had from him at the end. But he was talking very companionably. And he said, I don't know if this ever happens to any of you, he said, but sometimes I don't feel completely in tune. That's how he described it. And then he began to describe what it feels like to be not quite in tune. And he'll talk about he's writing a letter to someone. And then there's a paragraph that he writes, and after he writes it, it doesn't feel quite right because it's not really what Master wants him to say. So he takes that paragraph out, and then he feels fine again. Or he starts a certain project and doesn't feel quite right. And so he'll back up until he feels that that's what Master wants him to do. I mean, such a simple thought. And he describes it so easily. The infallible sign of my guru's smile is the feeling of joy in my heart. I've been looking at this biography of Lahiri Mahashaya that many of you have heard Jyotish talk about. When I was there, I took the opportunity to get a couple of copies of it. And the author of the book makes an enormous point about the fact that Lahiri Mahashaya lived as a householder. This was a very radical thing for the time. And the author of the book is wanting us to make sure we grasp how radical this is. So he repeatedly talks about Lahiri going to work and earning a living and taking care of his family and all of these different parts, and how all of that had absolutely nothing to do with his perfect attunement with divine consciousness. And going all the way to India, doing all the things that I did, you know, traveling and being everywhere. It looks like a lot happens. And it really is different over there, increasingly less so. I think in 10 more years it will look like every other place in the world. The last thing I did in India was to go to a restaurant, you won't believe this, called Fat Lulu's for pizza. Very good pizza, I must add. You know, right in the midst of this India-seeming restaurant, shopping center and so on. But despite all that, it looks like a lot is happening. And for that reason, travel is very helpful, because it helps us realize that all we ever walk around in is our own consciousness. And our own consciousness also becomes very, very simple. Am I feeling the joyful presence of God and Guru, or am I not? Am I acting on their behalf, or have I fallen into all these thoughts that are so easy to think about? What do I want? How do I feel? What is my preference? Do I really like it here? Everybody hits a certain point on an India journey. I hit it when we were in the non-air-conditioned taxi. And we were somewhere in Bombay. And I leaned over to Sherjo, who had arranged the taxi. Never get me a non-AC cab again, I said. And then I sat back. Later, we're trying to get home. He looks at me and he says, I don't know how to get us an air-conditioned cab. How are we going to get home? It's all right, Sherjo, it's past, you know. I went through it. I'm free. We can go home in anything you want. We can take a three-wheeler. It doesn't make any difference. All you ever have is your consciousness. And you have all these things stack up. And they all stack up, and they give you an excuse to move out of that ray, to move out of that joy, to go back into what I like and what I don't like, or to be an instrument of the divine. In 2003, when Swamiji was talking about Master, and he was returning to India, and he was just trying to figure out how to finish what he started, but was interrupted in 1962. All these years later, he's trying to finish what he started. and what he says, and says it so deeply and so vividly that death does not touch Master's consciousness. The absence of his physical body does not remove him from our hearts. The absence of his physical body does not make him any less present to our consciousness. You know, the living presence of the Master. To those who think me near, I will be near. And that is, when it all comes down to it, our only job. We hold all these other responsibilities. We earn money. We have relationships. We go in and out of God knows what. There's always something going on. The drama just never stops, does it? My motto in life is, something always happens. I don't mean something good always happens. I'm not saying that. It's just, but something always happens. It's never going to stop. And it's never going to be easier than it is right now. In fact, the more we imagine that when these things get in place, this opportunity, this test ends, this astrological period changes, this relationship gets settled, then. That's the only thing that makes it difficult, is that simple thought. I've got to have an air-conditioned cab. I just can't stand it. Whatever it is, in that moment, Master weeps for us because we have separated ourselves from him. I don't know if it ever happens to you, Swamiji said, but sometimes I don't feel quite in tune. And as soon as I feel that, he says, I just go until I find that point of alignment. You know, that river is always flowing. We were in wherever, somewhere in the south, Bangalore. It was in the south of India where there's a greater presence of Christianity. And we were showing the Finding Happiness movie, a little VIP showing, which we did a lot of. And the hall that they had rented was the auditorium of a convent. That's what it was. So we're there, and there's a big statue of Joseph holding the baby, which I guess you don't see Joseph holding the baby as often. Arjuna was with us, who was raised Catholic, and he was conscious of the fact that this was unusual. And everything else. I'm sitting there, just looking at this church. And Arjuna reminds me that one disciple of Jesus, Thomas, went to that part of the world. All by himself, or maybe with a companion or two, but all alone, with the awareness of his relationship to Jesus, he carried that message through that whole part of the world. And there's a huge Christian devotion to Jesus down there because of one disciple who really believed. He really believed, and he himself became like Christ himself. The miracles of his life are the same miracles that Jesus was able to perform. He felt that call, and he took that incarnation, and he gave it to his Master. You know, one lifetime is just so quick. Just goes like nothing. Master's own life, it just went like nothing. Swamiji lived for 86 years, but then it's gone. In each of our own incarnations, we're watching them roll along, aren't we? We're just watching them roll along. Give that incarnation to the Master. See how much we can do for our own consciousness and for him. And is there a difference? You know? The Master feels God call him into a body. I'd love to just... What does that mean? I think what it partly means is that we called him into a body. Babaji says, I see potential saints in America and Europe waiting to be awakened. And so that power of our need, our need to be free, our need to understand, our need to not be separated from our own joy. That calls him into a body. That calls him into America. I remember Swamiji on one occasion. It was about just before he went to India. I was talking to him on the phone. And he was saying something about just being done, really done on a big level, having done all the work he came to do. This was before he was called to India. Having done the work he came to do, and being done with this plane of existence. After I go, he said, I don't intend to come back. He said, although I know myself, and I'll probably come back to help all of you. Just like that. I said, that's the only reason you came this time, isn't it? He said, yes. Just like that. All of us. For us. Really meditate on that. Really meditate on that. Your heart draws that much power. It drew Thomas to India. It drew Christ into this world. It drew Master to Los Angeles. It drew Lahiri to Babaji. Your heart, my heart, our deep and sincere longing to be free. The Master gives his life for us. And we have to give our lives back. Whether that's dramatic or unobservable. One of my friends, in her story about Swamiji, she wrote, you know, mine has been a humble life. You know, there will be not even a footnote in history. But then she talks from the poem Samadhi. You know, a blade of grass, a mote of dust, a sparrow falls not without my sight. And in that humility, in that sweetness, in that, in its odd way, in that divine greatness, all of us live. And everything we're seeking in all of this is there in that alignment. With that alignment, go forth. No, do anything you want, anything your heart calls you to do, if you do it in the presence of the Master. Then we will fulfill our destiny, and he will have fulfilled his. God bless you.
Master, may thy joy fill our days. Oh, Master, may thy wisdom guide our ways. The time has come for us to see that there's but one reality. Upon the earth and high above, the truth that all was made from love. A love that calls to us to fly above the hills, above the sky, above the storms, above the pain. A land where peace and laughter reign. Oh, Master, may thy joy fill our days. Oh, Master, may thy wisdom guide our ways. The time has come for us to see that there's but one reality upon the earth and high above, the truth that all was made for.